commercial-free radio. Right now, it's 10 a.m. What is it? Sunny? Yeah, it's sunny. Actually, it's quite beautiful outside. Sunny, it's going up to about 85 degrees today. Coming up next is Ecologic over this listener-sponsored radio station, WBAI.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, then tell me where we gonna plant our seeds.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic at our new time. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for Wednesday, August 9th, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today our guests are Alice Slater from World Beyond War and Linda Pence-Gunter of Beyond Nuclear. We'll be talking about preventing the worst possible environmental disaster, nuclear war. First, we'll talk about nuclear downwinders, cleaner oceans, Hiroshima manga, and the homeowner insurance canceled due to climate change.
We try to open every show with good news. The 1990 Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, RECA, left out many downwinder residents of seven Western states who either were exposed to radiation during U.S. military nuclear testing or worked in uranium mines, mills, or transported uranium after 1971. A bill to expand and extend RECA has been repeatedly introduced into the Senate. And finally, it has passed, with all but two Democrats and 12 Republicans voting in favor.
As ocean waters and rivers that feed the ocean, such as the Hudson, get cleaner, the whole ecosystem is healthier and the critters that live there can reproduce better, from such invertebrates as clams and sea anemones to fish and whales. Great news, of course, but with the increase in small fish comes an increase in bigger fish that eat them and an increase in sharks that eat the bigger fish. Predators are important to all ecosystems, whether they're wolves in Yellowstone, hawks at a bird feeder, or sharks in the ocean. They make their prey species healthier and smarter. Predators even improve populations of plants, from trees to seaweed. I like this statement by Benji Jones from Vox.com. Sharks make headlines when they accidentally bite a single human. Severe human-caused declines of sharks draw far less attention. Benji is talking about the severe worldwide decline in sharks as well as the fish they eat. A third of all shark species are threatened with extinction. Fish oil is healthy for sharks. People do not provide the same nutrients, so when sharks accidentally bite people, they almost always let go. We are not very nutritious to them.
Gavin Naylor, a shark researcher from the University of Florida, is also quoted in that article. Human bites are almost always accidental. A shark might confuse a person for marine life or simply snag them for accidentally while trying to chomp down on some fish. Sharks hunt using organs on their face that sends electrical signals, relying only partially on smell and vision. Sometimes rowdy humans can mimic the signal emitted by schools of fish. We link to the Vox article from our website, ecoradio.org.
We were saddened to learn of the passing this week of New Jersey environmentalist Edward Lloyd, who served on the Pinelands Commission since 2002 and was on the board of the Philanthropic Fund for New Jersey. The founding director of the Rutgers University Law School Environmental Law Clinic, Mr. Lloyd also directed the Columbia Law School's Environmental Law Clinic. He led the litigation against Toms River Superfund polluter Seba Geigy and the Department of Environmental Protection for allowing dumping into the ocean, and sued Governor Christie for pulling out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, REGI. Retired Sierra Club president Jeff Tittle noted that Lloyd was involved in every major environmental battle for more than a half century. He leaves a strong legacy of environmental protection.
Wow. The promotional meme for this show, it's on our website, has excerpts from the manga Barefoot Gen, which is a Japanese graphic novel written and drawn by Keiji Nakazawa, who is a survivor of the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. Barefoot Gen is very powerful, and at one time was distributed by the War Resisters League. It's available in many libraries, including the New York Public Library.
Now we welcome our guest. Please introduce yourself, Alice.
Hello, I'm Alice Slater. I'm in New York City in the Lenape land of Manahatta, which meant place of many hills. I found out after many years of living in New York. And I'm on the board of World Beyond War, working to end war on the planet. And I've been a nuclear anti-nuclear activist for years, starting with the Lawyers Alliance for Nuclear Arms Control and Abolition 2000 and the wonderful ICANN campaign that won the Nobel Peace Prize because we finally got the world to say they're illegal, you can't use them, they're banned, you can't threaten to use them. So there's a whole bunch of other things, but that's my major stuff right there.
And Linda?
I'm Linda Pence-Gunter. I'm with an NGO called Beyond Nuclear. We're based in the nuclear-free zone of Tacoma Park, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. And I'm the international specialist at Beyond Nuclear. I also write and edit our news site called Beyond Nuclear International.
And, you know, we refer to nuclear war as the worst possible environmental disaster. I think we can start just with nuclear winter on how bad that is. Alice, I see you nodding.
Well, nuclear winter is a solution to global warming. Because they say if you use as few as 100 nuclear weapons, it will cloud the sky for years. The sun won't get through, the plants won't grow, and people will die. The earth will freeze, and we won't have enough food to be grown. So, I mean, nuclear winter is if all the bombs go off. That's like the least likely. It was like
Helen Caldicott said that there would be nuclear winter with an exchange of 5 bombs in two countries.
Maybe I'm wrong then. Maybe
at the time, she was thinking that maybe India and Pakistan would have a nuclear exchange of 5 bombs each.
Everybody's saying it's India and Pakistan, but it's not going to be India and Pakistan. It's going to be the U.S. and Russia that have 2,500 on missiles loaded, pointed at each other, ready to go. In China, and we have 13,000 of the 14,000 nuclear bombs on the planet. All the other 7 countries have 1,000 between them. And in China, if we can acknowledge the wisdom of the East, they keep their warheads separated from their missiles. So if they want to use it, they got to literally screw it on before they can shoot it. Not us. We're ready to go. And we've had so many accidents already, you know. So, you know, they're always picking on India and Pakistan. Let's talk about where the real problem is.
I think the reason is that the modeling that was done and the study that was done out of Rutgers used that as an example. What if there were 50 bombs used between India and Pakistan each, and what would the yields be like? But what it helped helped to understand was just the difference even now between the circumstances we're in compared to when Carl Sagan first introduced this concept with Paul Ehrlich here in Washington, D.C. several decades ago, because the fuel load in our cities is now much greater. So when we start to talk about the, you know, the connection with, between the climate crisis and this, it's very pertinent because we're so much more loaded in our cities with fuel load that if and when a nuclear exchange were to happen, the amount of carbon and soot and fire and smoke that would be lost in the air is significantly more than it would have been in the 1980s. So we're looking at what those studies say is we're looking at a nuclear winter-like effect. So it wouldn't be the true nuclear winter of the Sagan studies of darkness and a sort of a new ice age, but it would, in fact, as Alice pointed out, destroy agriculture to such an extent that people would actually starve as opposed to freeze necessarily to death. So it is a nuclear winter-like effect. And so although it's not necessarily considered the most probable site for where this to happen, it was a good way to model what could transpire from somewhere, you know, in the southern hemisphere, which is sometimes considered, you know, less likely to be affected than the northern hemisphere. What this showed was that if this exchange happened even in the southern hemisphere, it would affect the northern hemisphere too.
Now, when you talk about the fuel, you mean because the heat of the nuclear bombs would set off all the gas tanks and all the fuel tanks and everything?
Yeah, I'm talking about the fact that we drive more cars, we burn more fossil fuels, you know, that there's just much more fuel in our cities than there was in 1982. So it's a much more, you know, because we haven't acted on the climate crisis and reduced our fossil fuel use, but quite the reverse, and that's still happening, we've made the conflagration statistics higher. I mean, I'm not a Rutgers scientist, so I can't speak completely to the study, but that's my understanding of what is meant by that term. Yeah.
And so we're talking about the intense heat of a nuclear bomb, a single nuclear bomb with the temperature of the sun.
Yeah, but you'd have to have more than one to do that. One, you'd only wipe out a whole city.
Oh, well, that's okay then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but also,
I know what you meant.
Also, when we have one, somebody's going to retaliate. There's going to be another.
Maybe they'll be smart enough not. I mean, who knows? I mean, that's why we have
to. We don't want the first one.
It's awful. It's terrible. That's why we have to ban it and get rid of them and figure out how to do this.
But that's also the argument, you know, that there's been discussion. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm sort of diverting the subject a little bit, but when we start to talk about the situation in Russia and Ukraine and whether or not nuclear weapons will be used there, they're talking about tactical nuclear weapons, which have, you know, are misleadingly represented as small, you know, that the danger of using tactical nuclear weapons, which are not small, they're just lower yield than strategic nuclear weapons, but they're not small. And in fact, they're, you know, five times the yield of Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs.
Wow.
So it's a huge, that what you've just mentioned is that it's not likely to be just one, you know, that once one is used, then yes, you start to see retaliation and you see escalation. So even if you're talking about a war that uses tactical versus strategic nuclear weapons, it can still escalate into a full-blown nuclear
war. I mean, we shouldn't even talk about tactical. The trigger for the hydrogen bomb is a nuclear bomb, is a tactical. It's what they used on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That's the trigger for the hydrogen bomb. And if you saw Oppenheimer, you see Teller, the mad scientist that wants to keep going. At least those guys had a little remorse and regret, you know, the ones that did the atom bomb. He was already working on the hydrogen bomb, you know. So when they try to make it sound pleasant, like tactical, I mean, we shouldn't use those words. We shouldn't even use
them. Alice Slater, Lynch, or Penn Gunter, both of you saw the Oppenheimer film. And there's been an incredible amount of talk about it. What did you guys think of it? Alice, we'll start with you.
I thought it was good. I mean, it didn't go as far as it could have. And we've had incredible feedback from the indigenous people and the downwinders about what it left out in terms of what it did to the environment. But it was a fairly honest thing of how it happened and what they were thinking. And, you know, what they left out that I really regretted. There was a scientist, Joseph Rotblat, a Polish physicist that was afraid. They were all afraid of the Nazis. That was their rationale. They were going to get the bomb before the Nazis did. So he escaped from Poland and went to Los Alamos to work on the bomb. And in 1944, they knew Germany wasn't going to get the bomb. And he said, we should quit. And they said, we're not quitting. And he quit. They gave him the Nobel Peace Prize in 1995. I met him when we organized Abolition 2000. But there was also a letter that was written to Truman from the scientists in the labs not to go ahead. And that wasn't easy, you know, so they didn't show you everything that they might have shown aside from the environmental stuff. They didn't even show you there was some pushback before it was dropped. And of course, what we found out was we didn't have to drop it at all. I mean, you know, Japan was getting ready to surrender and they were really doing it to show Russia what we could do, you know. And as far as Russia goes, Stalin and Eleanor Roosevelt, Stalin asked Truman when we finished World War II and we were allies and we got together to establish the United Nations to end the scourge of war, Stalin said to Truman, turn the bomb over to the UN and put it under UN control. And we turned him down. I mean, we had an opportunity right then. It's always been us. Every time I think of nuclear abolition, I think of Walt Kelly's pogo in the Red Scare, which we're going through again, where he says, we met the enemy and he is us. And it's always been us. Like we promised Gorbachev we weren't going to expand NATO, and then Clinton expanded it and we're going to put it right in.
But oh no, you like the movie, right, Alice?
I think it's good because it got people talking. And it was funny. I went to a big theater in New York where they were playing Barbie at the same time. And all the women were there in pink. And I said, what's great with Barbie? And they said, you know, we like, and I said, well, I just came out of Oppenheimer. They said, we saw it. So everybody was seeing Barbie and Oppenheimer. And there's a connection. I can't believe how good Barbie was. They were taking on the patriarchy. You
and
know?
Linda, you saw it too?
I haven't seen Barbie.
I should. I mean, it's a good message for the world right now. As a matter of fact, somebody was telling me how are Oppenheimer and Barbie the same? And there's a
scene. Okay, wait. Let Linda talk about Oppenheimer.
Okay, I think, you know, it's a three-hour film. So it's not a six-hour film. if we want it to include everything, I think Nolan is a storyteller and a very good storyteller, Christopher Nolan, the director of the film. And it's a very, very well-made film, extremely well acted. And that's what counts to me. I understand that it didn't include absolutely everything. It couldn't include absolutely everything. It was a biopic about Oppenheimer. That's, you know, it was told through him and who he was, trying to sort of understand who he was and this journey that he went on and these conversations that he had and then what was, you know, how he was persecuted as well. And so for me, it was just the most magnificent assist and launch pad for our movement in a way that we've never had. I mean, and so in fact, the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium, which is the Trinity Downwinders Group, has been on NPR twice, everywhere, on the front page of the Washington Post, in an op-ed in the New York Times. I mean, it has been a marvelous opportunity to bring this subject right back into the consciousness of the American public, including people who think they're just interested in Barbie, which is great because those are the people, you know, in all seriousness, I mean, those are the people we need to reach. Alice and I can go to Oppenheimer and that's great, but we're already on board, you know, so we're not the target audience. And for me, it served exactly as the same kind of vehicle as the Chernobyl television series that was produced by Sky and HBO, which was also a drama, which also had to decide what of elements of this disaster do we focus on, and told stories, different perspectives, you know, and to watch, you know, Jared Harris explain a positive void coefficient as part of drama, you know, like, yes, you know, this is an incredible feat that people, you know, who weren't alive when Chernobyl happened, started to really ask questions, and it made no bones about the outcome of that. So I think for our movement, we, rather than tear it down. We should be extremely appreciative of the opportunity it's given us to tell those additional stories, because that's what he's unveiled for everybody, is a platform to tell indigenous stories. And they're doing it. And most miraculously of all, the media, who's usually completely lazy about this and hasn't written diddly squat about it for decades, is suddenly all over the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. They're all over where did these plumes really go, not just from Trinity, but from the Nevada test site. You know, there's a couple of films out now on this subject of downwinders. Hopefully they'll get a huge boost as well, because suddenly people are waking up to the reality of what happens once you unleash this terrible demon. So I'm all for it. And I'm just glad it was a good film, because if it had been a schlocky film, it would have been less helpful. But it's actually a really great piece of cinema, so that helps as well.
Yeah, we'll talk later about a WBAI premium that tells the story of Hiroshima survivors.
Linda, you mentioned Chernobyl just now. Chernobyl was 1986, a nuclear power plant accident. Hiroshima was 1945, dropping of an atomic bomb. How would you compare them?
Well, you know, I don't know about compare them. I think what you're probably referring to is the fact that people do live in Hiroshima and Nagasaki today. Nobody is going to live in the Chernobyl, the 1,000 square mile Chernobyl exclusion zone, for the foreseeable future. That's not in any way to diminish or understate the horrors of what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but it's to make the point that we need to consider the lethality of a nuclear power plant on a much higher level than we do now. We sort of look at nuclear weapons, the ultimate horror, which is the subject of today of our conversation. And then nuclear power is sort of the benign stepchild that's perfectly safe and clean and no big deal, you know, and that's absolutely a lie. And
I always call it the evil twin.
Evil twins.
Because
it
was actually created to lull people to accept the bomb, because Eisenhower created atoms to peace when we had this testing in the Pacific and knocked over this Japanese fishing boat, the Lucky Dragon. Japan was so mad at us that he came up with atoms to peace, and they gave free nuclear power to Japan to make them happy. They're going to have this wonderful, peaceful nuclear power. He couldn't sell it in America. Westinghouse and GE wouldn't go near it. They had to do the Price-Anderson Act and subsidize it heavily. And I just want to say about nuclear power, right here in New York State, right now, we have finally closed down a nuclear power plant that was 25 miles from New York City on the Hudson River that 911 had in their target. They didn't hit it. Instead, they hit the World Trade Center, you know, the that date. We've passed a law. We got everybody in the state and the assembly, because Holtec, this corrupt corporation that's managing the cleanup, they have been in so many lawsuits. They want to dump tritiated water in the Hudson River. And we got legislation in both houses, and the governor won't sign it. If you're listening to BAI right now, call Governor Hochul and tell her to sign that bill, because otherwise they're going to poison the river again, and the fish and the people, and it's all the communities up and down. And this is nuclear power is the gift that never ends. It goes forever. It's forever. It's infinite. Some of it lasts for 100,000 years. You know, the nuclear waste. I mean, we don't know, have a clue what to do with it. We should certainly stop making more.
Linda?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, the point I was trying to make is the longevity of the radioactive isotopes that get out of a nuclear power plant, and the way they get out, you know, it's not an air burst where it dissipates fast. And most of the plutonium in the bomb over Nagasaki was dissipated. So only a fraction of that actually contaminated people in the ground. I mean, obviously in a terrible way. But the what gets, you know, what's in, for example, Zaporizhia, I actually just got some information from a Russian colleague who's a very brave activist in Russia, who's calling out, you know, the situation, who says there are about 50 tons of plutonium-239 accumulated at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine. That's six reactors. And that is 50,000 times more than the mass of plutonium that radioactively contaminated Nagasaki. So the and if Zaporizhia nuclear power plants were fully breached, you know, all six reactors and their fuel pools, and everything gets out, you're talking about a contamination that would spread on the wind, you know, wherever the weather goes, wherever the wind blows, wherever it rains, a contamination of a much higher lethality, of much longer, you know, 24,000 years is the half-life of plutonium. So, you know, after 24,000 years, it's half as radioactive as it was. So you can do them how long it persists. So you're talking about a contamination of agriculture, as we talked about before, agricultural lands, soil, water, air, people's bodies for generations.
Yeah. So excuse us, Alice and Linda, as we have to take a short break. We'll be back with our guests soon. All producers need to raise money to keep WBAI on the air to ensure that the bills get paid and the transmission tower keeps transmitting.
First-hand stories of six survivors of the Hiroshima bombing and the people they encountered right after the bombing are available from the Pacifica Archives, a 2004 broadcast of the radio play Hiroshima from the People, based on John Hersey's interviews and his article in the New Yorker magazine. Hiroshima from the People can be yours for a donation of $99.50, 99.5, our station. And includes actors such as Tyne Daly, Ruby Dee, Daniel Benzali, Roscoe Lee Brown, and others.
We support every environmental issue, so a donation to us is like supporting many groups. Ecologic brings you actions you can take. Letters, emails, petitions, rallies, marches, direct actions, concerts, webinars, conferences, lobbying efforts. It's all important. Help us to help community groups get the word out.
Some of you are returning listeners. Welcome back. Aren't you glad many of your old favorites are still in the air? We also hear from people who are new to WBAI. They appreciate our independence and the news, information, and entertainment that is so different from corporate media. We have such a great history, including that 2004 live broadcast of Hiroshima, which can be yours for $99.50. And there are still radio dramas on WBAI. Some of us have been listening for decades, not always consistently, but we come back and find good programs.
Some of them are old favorites. Ecologic has been on WBAI for more than 21 years. Help ensure that when you tune in next, we are here for you. Please support us with a donation today to let us know that you are listening. No amount is too small or too big. You can contribute by mail or call 212-209-2950 or go to ecologic.wbai.org.
I was in a writer's circle at my local library reading Ecologic's upcoming news to them back before Donna and Sally were writing it with me. One of the people told everyone that when she and her husband moved to New York City because of his job, they felt very lonely until they discovered WBAI. Listening to BAI, she realized, we have friends here. Suddenly, she didn't mind having moved out here. There is a specialness to WBAI that goes beyond the shows themselves.
What were you doing October 2019? It was before COVID, but there was a different threat that knocked in the door. Literally, a rogue group from Pacifica, WBAI's parent organization, were conspiring to close WBAI and sell the radio signal. That's our most valuable asset. They blame others for the problems of the whole. If you want to see WBAI stay afloat, please see this, feel this, hear this radio station as yours. The bad guys are not going away. Just as in the environmental movements, they keep coming back. We must stay vigilant. We all know that money is tight now, and that goes double for nonprofits and all people's media. The people who often care the most are the most disenfranchised with shallower pockets. But as Pete Seeger said, in many ways and many times, it's going to be saved by millions of little things. Let's all chip in to keep our station strong. How much would it hurt your lifestyle to pledge as an Ecologic BAI buddy for $10, $15, or more dollars a month? Please show your support. We need you.
There's a WBAI members election coming up really soon. Voting takes place between August 15th and September 20th. Those of you who are members, please watch out for your ballot. It will be as important to saving the station as it was back in October 2019. If you have donated at least $25 since last July up to June 30th, or volunteered at least 3 hours, you are considered a voting member. There is voting almost every year, so becoming a member is always a good thing. Please send in your $25 or go to WBAI.org for Hiroshima from the People. This really is your radio station.
You who listen to WBAI have access to information that your friends and family don't listen, don't have. Sounds like Linda and Alice here. You have facts that they don't have. You know about events they don't know about. You hear experts they don't hear.
We're so glad that BAI's Monday evening program, Housing Notebook, found the amazing radio drama of Hiroshima from the People, and that we can offer it to you as a premium for $99.5. That's $99.50 to the Ecologic audience. This is your station, your programming. Be part of it.
Go to the WBAI archives and listen to an episode of Ecologic that you missed or want to hear again. www.ecoradio.org has a list of the last 3 years of Ecologic and direct links to hear them.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and our premium. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
I learned about this 1957 Calypso song from a wonderful activist, Yoko Tonohira, when she was on Ecologic in 2012. Here are the Talbot Brothers of Bermuda with Atomic Nightmare.
Oh, listen to me, nightmare, about the atomic bomb. When you hear the story, then I know you're gonna wanna run. You gonna run, run, run back where you come from. I just heard from a little bird, they're gonna drop the atomic bomb. Talk about a flying saucer, streaking through the sky. I'm gonna stop to find out if they're stopping or going by. I'm gonna run, run, run like a son of a gun. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. Oh, run, run, run like a son of a gun. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. They say stand still like a soldier until the threat is gone. And if they drop the atomic bomb, it's gonna fall down in the pond. But me, I'm gonna be moving, make room, I wanna pass. I'm gonna show that old spaceship an awful lot of class. I'm gonna run, run, run like a son of a gun. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. Oh, run, run, run like a son of a gun. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. Talk about atomic submarine and a guy low missile too. If they can do about an RPM, then I can do that too. I'm gonna run, run, run like a son of a gun. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. Oh, run, run, run like a son of a gun. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. Hey! I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. Oh, run, run, run like a son of a gun. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I'm really going to run. Run, 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 run. Run, run,
run. Wait for me, wait for me, man.
That was the Talbot Brothers of Bermuda singing Atomic Nightmare.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale.
We're back with Alice Slater and Linda Pence Gunter talking about nuclear war and its environmental impact.
Alice, tell us a little bit about the ICANN initiative.
Well, this was a wonderful grassroots initiative. It's, we had originally the Non-Proliferation Treaty that was negotiated and signed in 1970, in which five nuclear weapon states, the U.S., Russia, England, France, and China, promised to make good faith efforts to eliminate their nuclear arsenals. That was the language. If all the rest of the world promised not to get it. And everybody signed that treaty except three countries, India, Pakistan, and Israel. They never signed and they got them. And this NPT had a Faustian bargain that if, in order to sweeten the pot and let everybody join the treaty, they promised everybody an inalienable right to peaceful nuclear power. So we gave them the keys to the bomb factory, you know, when they joined the treaty. North Korea walked out and started to enrich, and we were afraid Iran was doing that, but they weren't really committed to a weapon. And it went nowhere. And at one point, they kept reviewing every 5 years, and they kept making new promises, and they never, not only did they not make good faith efforts for nuclear disarmament, but Obama committed $1 trillion for two new nuclear bomb factories, a 20-year program of missiles, planes, submarines, new warheads. It was just proliferating forever. So South Africa made this speech. This is like nuclear apartheid. The nuclear haves are holding the have-nots hostage. And the Red Cross gave this great talk about the humanitarian consequences of nuclear war, and everybody forgot about it. It was like the Cold War was over. Nobody was thinking about it. So that got the whole ICANN campaign started. They said,
which ICANN stand for?
The International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. And the final thing that motivated ICANN to organize and get a treaty to say they're illegal, they're banned, you can't trap them, you can't threaten to use them, you can't use them. Just like we did for chemical and biological. We never did that in the NPT. We just said we're going to make good faith efforts. And before the ICANN's treaty got started, there was a big case in the International Court of Justice, the World Court, that was brought by the Lawyers Committee for Nuclear Policy. I was a member, to ask the World Court to say that nuclear weapons are illegal. And they didn't. They said, we're not going to rule if they're illegal in the very case. They said they're generally illegal, which is like saying you're generally pregnant. And we're not going to rule whether they're illegal in the very case where the survival of the state is at stake.
How many countries got involved?
Well, it was brought by, it was one country. We were the plaintiff. You know, we had different people from lawyers from all over the world.
How many people signed? There was a lot of countries signed onto that.
What? Which? No,
well,
it was
the original ICANN treaty and then the United Nations.
Oh, no, but I'm talking about the lawsuit before where the World Court really dissed us. They said there's an obligation in the NPT.
Yeah, we have to make it quick because we are running out of time.
Well, ICANN took off, and after 10 years, we got negotiations through the United Nations and a treaty, 122 voted. None of the nuclear powers came. They all boycotted it. And now it's entered into force because you need 50 countries to ratify. So it's a law now. And it's, but you still have all the nuclear weapon states. So my proposal for how we have to get the nuclear weapon state, it's all up to the U.S. Russia and China have been asking us forever to do a treaty to ban weapons in space. We actually veto it, and we won't let it even be discussed in the Commission on Disarmament in Geneva, where you need consensus. Also, they have proposals every year in the General Assembly to ban cyber war. We have to make an opening to Russia and China that we're willing to talk about these things, and then nuclear weapons can be put on the table. They are not going to put nuclear weapons on the table. Oh. Gorbachev said to Reagan, he let all of Eastern Europe go without a shot. Let's get rid of nukes. Reagan said, great. So Gorbachev says, but don't do Star Wars. And Reagan said, I can't give up Star Wars. So that was the end of that. You know, so plus we promised him we wouldn't expand NATO. I found out 27 million Russians were killed by the Nazis. I don't think people know that. We promised him we wouldn't expand it one inch past Germany when we united Germany. So, I mean, there's a lot that has to happen. It has to happen from America. There's offers all over and feelers and pleas, and it's our country that's the gorilla in the...
Okay.
Linda, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I'd add, unfortunately, about the ICAN was definitely a moving force to get the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons a reality. There were other players as well, Ambassador Alexander Kmet from Austria and so forth. Unfortunately, the bargain that was also struck with the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons contains the exact same clause in the exact same wording from the non-proliferation treaty of this inalienable right to the development of so-called peaceful nuclear energy. So we've got a little ways to go still in terms of, as you said, handing the keys to the bomb back over. And it was apparently an equity issue, you know, that you referred to earlier, that the primary push to include that in order to get the signatories and ratifications came from African countries and global South countries who felt that they had been deprived of something that everyone else had, so they shouldn't be told that they can't have it. And so we've got a ways to go, I think, to educate and enlighten, you know, that nuclear power is a colonial force. It goes into countries in Africa and plunders it, as we've seen in Niger, and then leaves 20 million tons of radioactive waste behind in an impoverished country with no electricity and running water for most people. So this is not a bonanza. This is not a boon to your economy. This is a, you know, a death knell, frankly. And so we've got a ways to try to educate other countries why it's not an equity issue. It's really an inequity.
I just want to say we had to give in order to get it. No, you know, most people didn't want it. But the worst thing now that we should know is that we are proposing for Saudi Arabia to make friends with Israel. We're going to give them nuclear power. Saudi Arabia, everybody wants their bomb in the bomb factory, and they don't want to be subject to IAEA inspections. I mean, that would be a disaster.
Well, we invite you to call in with your comments and questions. The call-in phone number is 212-209-2877. Now's the time. Call 212-209-2877. Talk to Linda Pence-Gunter and Alice Slater.
While we're waiting for your calls, we'd like to tell you about a new documentary, A Compassionate Spy, about Theodore Hall, who in 1944 convinced that Germany was losing the war and fearing a fascist government in the United States, shared nuclear secrets with the Soviet Union. The film opened on Friday, August 4th, and continues through this Friday, August 11th, at Firehouse, DC TV's Cinema for Documentary Film. It's at 88 Lafayette Street. We link to it from our website, ecoradio.org. And do we have a caller?
And 212-209-2877. Call in, talk to Alice and Linda. You know, you were talking about when you mine uranium in any country, you leave this gigantic pile of incredibly poisonous nuclear waste. And, you know, it's people of out anywhere in the world should realize from what happened to the Native Americans in Arizona, New Mexico, and South Dakota, that it could happen to them too. But somehow the information, I don't understand why the information doesn't get through. Linda, you have a theory?
I think Alice was about to answer that, right?
I would say it's a very powerful lobby. Look at them now. They're trying to sell us small reactors. You know, I mean, there's a very powerful lobby that controls the media, that controls the message that people get. And that's why it's great that there are programs like this that should be supported, because at least you're hearing the other side of what's going on now. You don't hear this on in the mainstream media, or I call it the lamestream media.
And I would, you know, add that I don't think that most people do know about what happened to the Native American in this country as a result of uranium mining or anything else for that matter. It's by far the most overlooked, you know, and hidden community. You know, it wasn't even talked about, frankly, at the beginning of the COVID crisis. You know, what the one, probably the worst hit community of all in the country of the COVID crisis. So they're never included in discussions of race, discrimination, colonialism, oppression, poverty, alcoholism, all these things that happen. So I think that's a story that needs retelling a lot more.
That was good about Oppenheimer, because we're hearing now from indigenous and downwinders about how the uranium affected them.
And the number is 212-209-2877, and you are on the air.
I want to thank all of you for...
Welcome to BAI, and Ecologic.
Thank you. And I thank you for everything that you're talking about and elevating to our consciousness every week. This is Pastor Michael Vincent Crea, C-R-E-A. My human rights ministry is One World Life Systems. My father was head of logistics in London between 1943 and 46. He met my mother from occupied Ireland. And what you're bringing out is so essential that, you know, that this new, I do agree with the speaker who said, don't get focused or absorbed by its only a optic on Oppenheimer, because it does open the door for our questioning here and now, as you're doing. Secondly, we need to reach our young people. We had on Staten Island at my Catholic high school in 1972 a moratorium for 3 days where no classes were taught, and the English religion and history professors or teachers taught us all about what was going on in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, and this is, I'll end with so you can get some more callers, but in contemporary moral questions in senior year, we saw live, taken at the time, footage of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, persons getting bandaged. We saw Dresden. We saw in real life that. We were taught that African Americans have been enslaved, and I dare say since 1492, the so-called tale of Eurasia has had indigenous peoples, just like Leopold did to Africa, indigenous peoples in the so-called West. I don't know about West or left or right or progressive. Or, I say one because it's a circle. It's a tree of life. We've had indigenous peoples.
Thanks for your call, but we have another caller to get to.
House arrest has to stop, and this arrest all our humanity. Bye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
212-209-2877, and now you're on the air.
Hi, is this me?
It's you.
Yes.
Oh, hi. This is Matt. How are you doing? Okay.
Hello, Matt.
Yes.
Quite an important voice.
Okay. Just wanted to say, there's a speech by Ward Churchill called Manifest Destiny and the American Holocaust. Now, it's about an hour and a half long. He juxtaposes the Germany, the Nazi occupation and Holocaust with the American Indian. And we were just as bad. We were planning concentration camps and gas chambers for the Native Americans. But thank heavens it never came to fruition. We did bad enough. So there's that.
Okay.
And
you have any questions for Alice or Linda?
No, that's it. We should all be seeing the Oppenheimer movie.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're getting close to the end of our show. Boy, time really flies. So is there any request that you have for our listeners to do? Is there anything that because we're all feeling a little bit overwhelmed with this information.
Yes, I have a big request. Get to Governor Hochul and tell her to sign the bill and don't dare let them dump tritiated water in the Hudson River and poison all of New York. It's been passed in the state assembly and the state senate, and she's not signing the bill. We've been calling her every day and picketing her, and she's really in bed with the corporate crooks and Holtec. So that's definitely. And the other thing is to join World Beyond War, because it's not enough to end this war and that war. We got to end all wars. And, you know, it's not just enough to get rid of nuclear weapons. I mean, Biden is giving cluster bombs and depleted uranium to Ukraine. I mean, we got to end all of it. We just got to end the military.
And Linda?
I would say that you should ask your city, especially if you're outside of New York City, to join the ICANN pledge. So the ICANN pledge means that your city government pledges to comply with the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. You can imagine if every city in this country was a nuclear-free zone, we wouldn't have nuclear weapons. So that's an important step, and you can find that. It's ICANN, ICANN. You can find that on the ICANN website.
We did that in New York, I'd just like to add.
I think the website is icanw.org.
And that is what Ecologic does. It gives you a little hope, a little empowerment. But it's time to wrap up. So thanks for joining us this morning. For more information, go to worldbeyondwar.org and beyondnuclear.org. Also on EcoRadio, that's ECORADIO, we have information on a variety of environmental topics as well as an archive of our past shows.
We love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
And on ecoradio.org, we link to World Beyond War, we link to ICANN, we link to Beyond Nuclear, and those links will stay there. They're there right now.
Join us next week, Wednesday, August 16th. Energy wizard Lindsay Auden will explain ground source heat pumps and also how an entire town has lowered its greenhouse gas emissions. To support Ecologic, you can choose from our many premiums at ecologic.wbi.org. Become a member or contribute monthly as an Ecologic BAI buddy. Call 212-209-2950. We love to see those Ecologic buddy pledges.
WBAI is community radio, and there are a lot of ways to get involved. And, of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes a broadcast happen, the engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We are always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. If you listen live, we may be able to take your call and answer your question.
This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes. Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Sally Gellert.
I'm Ken Gale. Special thanks to Charlie Olson of the Environment TV for all his tech help.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Wednesday, August 16th at 10 a.m. with our guest, Lindsay Auden. And you can always find us on the archives. Check our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So solar power, inexpensive energy. So
Outreach and Fundraising Task Force meets Monday, August 14th at 7 p.m. We'll hear from the New York Immigration Coalition about the needs of new migrants and about how WBAI can better serve you. That's Monday, August 14th at 7 p.m. on Zoom. Call 646-558-8656, 646-558-8656, with meeting ID WBAILSB995 or 922-457-2995. The passcode is 995-9999. 995-9999, or go to the meeting section of WBAI.org. That's the meeting section of WBAI.org.
99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
Greetings, and thank you so much for listening to WBAI Radio. This Wednesday, August 9th at 3 p.m., please tune in for WBAI's Report to the Listener. WBAI's management, Bertol Reimers, WBAI's general manager, and Linda Perry, WBAI's program director, that's me, will deliver our Report to the Listener during the summer of 2023. Tune in this Wednesday at 3 p.m., and if you miss it, you can always listen to whatever we broadcast by going to WBAI.org. Just click on the archive and search for the program you want to hear. That's Wednesday, WBAI's Report to the Listener, August 9th at 3 p.m., right here on listener-sponsored WBAI New York. And just remember to grab your hat and leave your worries on the doorstep. Direct your feet on the sunny side of the street to WBAI New York.
Cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
David Kenny of Everything Old is New Again every Sunday night at 10. Please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again, because everything old is new again. I like it.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. It's 11 a.m. here in New York City. Coming up next is Living for the City.